Hey everybody, it's Sunny. I'm just letting you know that you're listening to this on the iTunes feed. Go sign up at the Patreon, subbeacon.com. Got to keep this thing sustainable or it's going to go away. I think you'll like this episode. We split duties a little bit because JVL, as you know, is not that into horror. He didn't really want to talk about Malignant, but Vic and I wanted to talk about Malignant. So it's we that's what we did. This week's episode that's going to be on the Patreon on Friday is a great one. We're going to be talking about Lularitch, which is, you think of it like a triptych with the Firefest documentary episode and the WeWork documentary episode. Now you've got Lularitch, which is either a pyramid scheme or a great way for women to earn money by selling leggings. So anyway, go to the Patreon, subbeacon.com. You will get the episodes 2 weeks before they drop on iTunes. You'll get exclusive bonus stuff that you can only get there, et cetera, et cetera. It's as little as $1 a month. It's really not very expensive, and you get to support something that you enjoy. So go check it out, subbeacon.com, and enjoy this episode.
The body of Dr. Florence Weaver was found brutally murdered in her home this morning.
Did you know her?
No, but I saw her die.
I'm seeing things. I'm seeing murders. As they're happening.
Hello?
He says his name is Gabriel. I think he's someone from my past.
Happy birthday.
Whatever happened to you before you joined our family hurt you in a way that I can't even imagine.
Stop saying that.
Maddie, who are you talking to?
Gabriel.
Is he your imaginary friend?
He's the devil.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Jonathan V. Last and Sunny Bunch. Just a reminder, the Subbeacon is now available through Patreon. Go to subbeacon.com, you'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and don't forget about the Subbeacon merchandise store at tpublic.com. Gentlemen.
Just had a payment. You each have like 10 bucks
really?
Coming to you.
Well, oh, okay, well then there, what is, oh, that is, you know what that can get me? That can get me, I believe, a Mexican Caesar at Chopped. Just barely.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Before tax?
Kale Caesar. I'll just take the kale Caesar.
Before tax, maybe.
Without chicken. Okay. Before tax. How are we? JVL, what's going on?
I'm fine. I'm still in recovery from yesterday. We had a social event at the office. Where a bunch of readers and podcast listeners from the Bulwark got together at a Nationals game.
Ah.
It's a fairly large crowd, a little bit reminiscent of being on a cruise ship. I took a Xanax and had a couple beers to get me through it.
That's a good combination.
And it was...
I believe the phrase you used was a handful of Xanax.
Victorina, how do you do it? Because I think I did very well. I think I made all the people who I spoke with very happy.
How did I do it, or why do I do it?
No. The question is how do, because so this is a I'm being like reasonably candid here. I think that I was a pretty good host, and I think that I made time for everybody who I could, and I think I was entertaining, and I think people enjoyed themselves. And I felt as though I had just run a marathon when it was over. I was so drained by it.
Yeah, but in a way, like, woo, that felt amazing.
No, not like that. In a way that I wanted to crawl into a cave and not speak to another human being for a week. Just the emotional energy it took to do that.
Well, if you're not used to it, then you would feel that way, sure. You know, if that's your, if it's
because some people,
default,
I think people like you, default. Now correct me if I'm wrong, when you exit a situation like that, you're jazzed. Like you can't sleep for hours because you're like flying high like a
no,
kite.
I remember the first time I emceed a wedding for my friend Brian Fontenin and his lovely wife Miriam. And I did it as a whole thing. I mean, I had material. It was very involved, and I pulled out all the stops because I had, it was my first gig, and it was very exciting, and I had all sorts of jokes, and I remember I even had to work with then Congressman David Dreyer.
Is that where you did the pussy cook?
No. That was at a dinner party. But then he had thrown me the mic, and I grabbed it. We did this thing, and I made various very sort of questionable jokes. But when I got back to the table, every time I got back to the table, I didn't feel like talking. Like I was so like I just wanted to eat and not chat with the people at the table. And then when you go back on, you're on again, you know. So it is it can be exhausting. And I maybe need a couple of hours alone and recharge, but that's all I need. And then I'm back on again. But you remember on the cruise ship, you know, we would sort of turn off when we're at the casino, for example. We're just on our own. We're doing our thing. And sometimes some of the guests would see us there, but we're, you know, just basically doing our thing. I like to think, I mean, but we're obviously different people. I like to think that the persona I have for a show or for being on is different than who I really am off the air. And then what happened once was I was at the barbershop and a listener to the show spotted me, but didn't say anything at the time, and literally watched me glad hand and say hi to everybody and say Habib. Goodbye. And say goodbye to everybody. I'm like, I don't want to miss any of the barbers, God forbid, you know. And so he was like, yeah, that was really, it was like a show. It was like a show, even though it wasn't on air. So it's just that way.
You are a naturally convivial person.
Yes. In a
way that JVL and I are not. Mm-hmm. I would say I'm very.
Would you?
I'm
you would be somewhere in the middle, Sonny. You're in between.
I'm close. I'm much closer to JVL in terms of like not really wanting to talk to people I don't know. I like it's hard for me sometimes. I would say that I'm like slightly more fluid than JVL in those situations.
Well, but here's the sticking point for me though. It's scale. If you sat me down at a baseball game with three people who were Subbeacon listeners or Bulwark people who I had never met before, I could have a really great time hanging out for 3 hours with those three people. Just it's the scale. Like once you are in a large group where you're ping-ponging back
even if it's not new people, JVL, I think you're not comfortable with more than three, I'd say.
Yeah.
Four. Right.
Yeah. No, I guess I could be at dinner with as many as seven human beings
right.
before I start getting like a little squirrely.
Seven plus you. So dinner for eight.
No, not seven plus
seven
me.
Total.
Not
seven max.
Seven total. Including you.
Seven max. Including like the
including
waiters.
The waiter.
The waiters.
The maitre d'.
The captains.
Enough of my psychosis.
No,
Sonny, did you have fun? Did people know who you were? Did people? Because I barely saw you once we got to the ballpark.
Yeah, no, it was fine. It was good. I enjoyed talking to people. There were a couple of Subbeacon listeners there, which was very exciting as well. So
good.
That's awesome.
Some Subbeacon Bulwark overlap there. It was fun. It was fun. I'm like you. It is not so much the like talking to new people as like having to talk to many new people all at once, and like
it's kind of like a wedding day. It's a whirlwind,
a little bit,
and being on the thing is there are differences with, for example, I like meeting if it's a lot of people, but they're all there because they listen to the show or whatever, or they're there because whatever you're speaking or whatever the deal is, and it's a lot of people. I don't mind working the room; it's great. Thanks for coming. What I do mind is a large crowd. Where if I have to go somewhere because I got invited to something and I don't know anybody or only some people, and you're doing this as a favor because somebody wanted you to go for whatever reason. And making new friends, I don't have a lot of energy
for that. You're
anymore.
Only comfortable doing it as long as people are there for you.
For me, yeah. I can meet a million people.
Right.
That's great. But if it's like, for example, every now and then, I can say this because Kate's cousin doesn't listen to the show, but, you know, he would invite us
you know, to like a dinner party, and we would think it would be just us, maybe, you know. And but every time we get invited, there's all these new people, but it's like new people every single time. And so it's like, hi, what do you do? That's interesting. Every, you know, and it's just exhausting. And it's like I have to add more people to the list. And what's your name? And remember the whole thing and find things in common. And what do we, you know, because you're there for a couple hours. That I find exhausting.
Yeah. Sonny, what you got a present from Matthias?
Oh. Matthias?
Matthias, what did you get? I assumed it was a Blu-ray from the feel of the package. Victorino, I have a present from his for you, which I have to pop in the mail to get over to you.
It is a Blu-ray. I'm not familiar with the film. It's
Emmanuel in Space.
No,
it's a staging of
Cosi fan tutti
wow. by Michael Haneke.
Because we all know how much Sonny loves opera.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, but Michael Haneke is an interesting director, so very nice. I'll see if it works on. I think I can't tell what region it is, but I have a region-free Blu-ray player, so it'll work no matter.
I believe one of my audition songs was a number from Cosi fan tutti. It was the one where, you know, we are two men with beards. Look at us. We're so charming and sophisticated. Is the like the English, when you translate these Italian operas into English and it's ridiculous.
They don't.
It only works.
But work. Yeah, God.
Really, oh, that's nice.
That's really good.
I did not see. I did. That's an opera I did not see when I was in Vienna. It never played that year, that season, for when I was there. But
how are you, Victorino?
Very good.
What's going on, buddy?
I'm doing terrible. I'm doing terrible.
No.
So, you know, as you know, I've had this.
Did you OD on Prick Dong?
No. So, you know, I have this the plantar fasciitis, which is it comes and goes on the left foot. After I run, or then after that, you're sitting for a long time, you stand up, and then you get a little gimpy, or in the morning, I'm a little gimpy. And then a few days ago, I had a major gout flare-up, the worst, the likes of which I have not seen in maybe 6 or 7 years. I've gone straight without any medication. Everything's been great, and this thing came on like... That is right. It was...
There's the gout watch.
It is awful. And the first thing I had to do was, I mean, it felt knotty for a few days. And I was like, well, I think it's something's coming on, but you know, I'm just going to keep on doing what I'm doing.
So you didn't even get a warning twinge?
No, it felt knotty. It felt not K-N-O-T-T-Y.
K-N-O-T-T-Y.
Yeah, not like my other activities. And so I woke up and my
big toe was in there. I didn't know how it got there.
I kept an eye on it. And then suddenly it just went into high gear like 2 days ago and yesterday and into today.
What have you been eating?
Worst. Ah, that is the question, Sonny.
So it was probably oatmeal.
It was the oatmeal.
Well, oatmeal
it's
and
fall,
beans.
And so you had oatmeal.
Oatmeal or beans. So, you know, I mean, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I've been drinking, I don't know, martinis, whiskey, and then some beer. But
Where'd you go to lunch on Friday?
Oh, no, nowhere. This was like after Kate was away, so I was hanging out at the neighbors, and I made martinis and stuff. And then on Saturday, they had a fire pit, so I brought out, you know, some whiskeys. And then on Sunday, I was at the Knights, and then they convinced me, somebody had a cigar. I said, why not? And that cigar, some Rebel 100, as well as a Wild Turkey 101 rye, which was actually quite delicious.
Wild turkey's good. I like wild turkey.
Yeah, and the rye, I thought it would be really...
I don't think I've had the rye.
It's really something. It's a revelation. I would not have had it myself, Sonny, because I'd say the whiskey. But anyway, so that's been going on. But then, what happened? What did I introduce into my diet? So I was at CVS because I had a coupon I had to use that was going to expire. Because you know me. Yes, that's right. I am.
You're like
in my,
a 75-year-old woman.
I was going to say, I'm like 75. I'm like, I'm all ready for that part of my life, by the way. So I said,
do you have a coupon folder?
No.
Like one of the little
I wouldn't call it a folder.
Unfold?
I wouldn't call it
it's
a
like,
folder.
It's like one of those accordion style ones that you unfold and they're separated by Cheerios coupons.
Do you have the little metal basket on wheels that you can push through the city as you put your groceries in?
I should have that. I do cut the coupon. And I just was like, oh,
is,
my gosh.
Is the highlight of your Sunday morning getting the wash? Oh, I guess it's
Saturday. Oh, they don't do that anymore. No, yeah, I don't get it
with,
anymore.
Like, the big, the big
yeah. That's how Rupert Murdoch
pays for itself, man.
Yes. It pays for itself. You could add it up, and you don't have to pay anything in the supermarket. So I had it was a 30% off entire purchase from CVS, which is a big deal. Not one item. So entire purchase. So I go in. I said, well, there were some
from
things
CVS?
I needed. CVS. I go to CVS for certain things. So anyway,
okay,
is that where you get your Wolverine blood?
I need to know what food you're buying. No,
I didn't
CBS.
Buy it. Well, okay, well, this is it, Sonny. So I had to get like face wash and stuff that, but I'm not going to get one thing. And so I said, okay, just load up with the other various sort of things I would get from CVS, and then on top of soap, whatever. And then I thought. I said, you know, sometimes in the afternoon I need a snack, but not candy, because chocolate, we have chocolate, but like kind of like a candy. Sometimes I want a candy. I go by the candy aisle and they had a special that was $4 for $5. Mike and Ike's, you know, Mike and Ike's.
I love Mike and
the
Ike's.
Box. So do I. So, and one of them, four, I can get different kinds, including sours, right? Mm. So I said, oh, this is good. I said, I brought
you
that.
You just want to go with original, man.
I have the original, too. So I brought I brought two boxes into the office the other day. And, man, I just start in the afternoon. I just lost track. I just start popping them in. Like, you know, like it's like almost heading towards half a box. And that's when all of a sudden, like not long after that, a few hours later, I could feel the swelling get worse and worse. So, of course, I looked it up. And, yes, an increase in what they say sucrose levels can trigger gout, particularly from candy, hard candy, sweet candy, or whatever. And I'm pretty sure it's the Mike and Ike's.
Toe or heel?
A toe. It's right on the base, the traditional location. And I have a pair of loafers that are pretty loose on me. I had to squeeze into that today, and it was ridiculous.
Big,
so
angry toe.
I'm hobbling. I'm like in Misery, the hobbling. You know how they, you know, they, that's what I'm like. It
can,
is.
You, can you throw that foot up in front of the cameras? We're going to have a look at that bad boy.
Do
is it like, I'm going to get you, sucker?
No, no. Like, Sonny's saying the Sonny, bunions. Don't look. Sonny,
I want to see it. I've never seen gout.
There. Can you see it in the light?
Look at that.
No.
There it is right there.
Yeah. It's like it's dislocated. It's like sticking out the side of his fucking foot. That's disgusting.
That's pretty nasty, dude.
It is. It's the real deal.
That's gross.
It's a good thing you didn't take a screenshot of that. Listeners would have paid a premium.
Someone put it back up there. Let's get a look at that.
Now, they're Japanese businessmen who would pay a lot for this, Victorino.
All right, I got it.
Wow.
It is.
So what do you do? Are you doing cherry juice or?
Okay, no, just a lot of water. A lot of water and taking a leave, because that's kind of like naproxen. And
it's literally naproxen.
Yes.
That's what a leave
so
is.
So I need to, although I can get, you know, I mean, I can get, I don't know, maybe more than that from a doctor, like increase the milligrams, like of endomethacin, colchicin, or something of that to that effect. I can't take allopurinol now because it's too late. It's happening already. But that's what I am. But I have to tell you, it is extremely painful. It looks like its own. I wouldn't even post that, Sonny. I think it's inappropriate. It looks like its own separate being that I just want to remove, like it's some sort of a malignancy.
what is his name in
Kuato. Kuato
yes!
In Total Recall.
How did you pull that?
I know. We do that every now and then. There's a little bit left in us there. Okay. So anyway, that was my
Kuato
transition.
It was what I was thinking about the whole time during Malignant. I mean, that's
yes.
Like,
okay. Well, speaking spoilers. Of which, over the weekend, Malignant grossed a whopping $5.4 million at the box office, just behind Free Guy at $5.6 million. And in first place again is Shang-Chi, and the Legend of the Ten Rings with $34.7 million box office. Thoughts? Is this great news or what? For Shang-Chi, not for Malignant.
Yeah, so the Shang-Chi news is good. For Marvel and Disney and the theater owners and everybody else, because it, you know, it dropped 53%, which like in normal times would be like, okay, 53%, that's not a bad drop, but it's not a great drop or anything. But these days, it's very, very good. And the again, the important thing is that the weekend number kept ticking up all weekend. At the beginning of the weekend, it looked like it was going to drop about 60%, and instead it dropped about 53%. So again, word of mouth is very strong. A lot of people are going to see it, which is good. I think people will be happy about it. The thing I'm most interested in, did you guys see the Christopher Nolan news?
Yes, he's going to do a movie about Robert Oppenheimer.
So Christopher Nolan's next movie is a $100 million historical drama about Robert Oppenheimer. And
is he going to set off the nuclear bomb?
He is doing it with Universal. I would assume that is...
I said, if you ever wondered how much it costs to drop an atom bomb, it's $100 million, it turns out.
I would, okay. I would assume he is going to be dropping an atomic bomb.
So
a small one.
He did this just to piss on the Warners folks.
Well, so the Hollywood Reporter, Hollywood Reporter had a whole story about like how it went down. Sony and Universal were, I think, the big ones at the end. Apple was also kind of in the mix. But he just wrung concessions out of them. It was like, I get 20% off dollar one. 20% off the gross. Not the net, the gross. He gets gross points, Christopher Nolan. The only other director, I think, who has that deal is Quentin Tarantino. He negotiated for not only a 120-day theatrical exclusive window, but he also said that Universal agreed to not release any movies within 3 weeks on either side. of the movie.
Wow.
So Universal will release no movies in that 6 week stretch that Oppenheimer or whatever it's going to be called is right in the middle of
dropping the big one.
I mean it's everything he had at Warner Brothers more or less, but like he's not
biopic.
For a historical drama.
No word.
Robert J. Oppenheimer. Who knows what it's actually about? I mean, nobody.
No word on who's the cat. No casting stuff. No
time.
Casting.
It's actually about time.
Right. Well, I mean, there's all sorts of clocks involved in the atom bomb. So yes,
did you know?
In a way,
did you know?
Is.
So in the famous Oppenheimer quote, you know, I am become
death,
death, destroyer of worlds. Mm-hmm. The more traditional word that is used for death in the original Sanskrit or whatever, is time.
How did you figure this out? Did you read this?
I read it in Tom Schoen's book about Christopher Nolan, the Nolan Variations. But the traditional translation of that word is actually time, not death. So who knows what the movie's actually going to be? I mean, like when we heard he was making a movie about Dunkirk, we weren't expecting a $100 million art film because that's what that was.
Right.
I mean,
that is in three parts.
With the weird structure,
air, land,
and the time
and
dilation, and all that. So I mean, who knows what the Oppenheimer movie will actually be about? But I would assume it has something to do with time.
And when we heard about Tenet, we assumed it would be a movie with a story.
Tenet has a story.
It's not for
the basics.
Is this where we can just get off the Nolan train? Finally,
we'll find out. We'll find out after this.
I mean, I
we gave him a pass.
He gets
a pass on Tenet.
You're not at least intrigued by the idea of a Christopher Nolan biopic.
I am offended by a guy who just turned out a turd like Tenet, demanding 3 weeks on either side of my film. That thou shalt not release, you know, whatever.
King shit. That's what he is. He is King Kong, baby.
But he's not.
But he is.
I mean, he makes
he
great movies,
is.
But as a business matter,
is.
This is people acting irrationally from a business perspective.
I don't think it is. I don't think it is. There are no... The only other director who has the sort of name brand ID that gets people into theaters...
Spielberg.
Because it is the director, is not Spielberg.
No, it's Tarantino.
It's not Spielberg. It's Quentin Tarantino. It's like, it's Quentin Tarantino and Christopher Nolan. And if you talk to anybody who works in theatrical or anybody who works in distribution, this is what they will tell you, because it happens time and again. And even a movie like Interstellar, which like didn't... I mean, it didn't do $1 billion, but it made more than enough money to break even. And it is a big, sprawling, blockbuster, sci-fi, think piece type movie. Like, there's nobody else. There is no other director on the planet who can make that movie and have it gross what he grossed. Again, Dunkirk is a $100 million World War II art movie. That's what it is more akin to an art movie than it is to a big blockbuster spectacle film. And that movie grossed $550 million, something like that. It got nominated for 10 Oscars. I mean, like, yeah. there is nobody else who can combine the box office and award season potential of Christopher Nolan just by his name alone. Except for Quentin Tarantino.
I like the traditional storytelling of the reboot of Midway, but Dunkirk is visually, for me, as you know, more pleasing.
Well, it's just a better movie.
I am much more excited about the new Hawkeye.
The effects. The series.
Yeah. Which is a clear adaptation of the Matt Fraction Hawkeye books, which were the Seinfeld of comic books. About 15 years ago, 10 years ago when they came out. Anybody who dabbles in the comic arts who has not read those, run out and get them. I'm trying to get J-Pod to read them because I think he'll love them. The whole idea is it's just
John,
like...
John went suspiciously quiet when you offered to send
tell
him...
Tell me about it.
To send him the trade paperback.
Tell me about it.
Those books. He clammed up.
It is... The thesis of it is... this is what Hawkeye does when he's not being an Avenger. And what he does is he just like hangs out in, I forget what section, I guess it's Queens.
I was going to say it's New York.
It's in New York. He's in Queens. He's got an apartment in this building. There's this Russian mobsters who are trying to evict the people in the building because it's a rent control building, I think. And they want to like get these people out so they could sell the building because it's, right. You know, things are booming in New York. And
right.
It's just, it's hysterically funny. It's so great. And
well, I think also
the
Jeremy
series trailer looks awesome.
I think Jeremy Renner, is, I like him a lot. And I think he makes a good Hawkeye. So, yeah. I hope it's better than Loki. So.
I mean... I don't know. Did anybody finish? Did anybody in America finish Loki?
I did not finish Loki. Sonny, you must have.
I finished Loki.
You did.
I watched the whole
thing.
Was
it worthwhile and satisfying?
It was fine. I liked the ending.
Really?
The ending with Jonathan Majors playing a version of Kang the Conqueror was pretty funny. Okay.
All right.
It's fine. Yeah. It is. This is how I feel about most of the Marvel televisual products. Like, I think the best of them is probably WandaVision.
WandaVision, yeah.
And that was the best because it was so kind of, it was very high concept. It was like we're doing a parody of sitcoms, and it like worked on that level. If no other, Loki like really dragged in the middle, and then it ended with a couple of pretty good episodes. I thought it had Richard Grant playing like classic Loki was very funny.
Interesting.
I don't know.
Okay, good. Well, this week we're actually not. This week we're talking about the movie that came in third place.
Yes.
But it debuted.
Malignant.
Which is simultaneously in theaters and an HBO Max.
Like everything else. Directed by Warner Brothers Slate.
Directed by James Wan. Sonny, how about a big boy review?
So Malignant. Before I describe the plot, I want to describe the mood of this movie, because the mood of this movie is, for about two-thirds of it, it's like a very cheesy 90s horror movie. Like, very, like, it's like lots of, you know, kind of jump scares and kind of arch humor, but also like corny and like not terribly well acted. Like it's a very weird movie for the first 90 minutes or so, first 80 minutes. And then the last 30 minutes, it gets totally bonkers. And it's like, and it's all of a sudden, it's no longer really a horror movie. It's more of an action movie. It's like more akin to The Terminator than to, to, or like Total Recall or something like that than it is to, a horror movie. And the levels of violence in this movie are of a variety that I have not seen in a major studio release in some time. I mean, like it's crazy. It's bonkers. So the plot of Malignant, it opens with a prologue set, I think it's 1993. A doctor is in a mental hospital talking about a patient that she is going to have to perform surgery on, and we don't really see the patient. We're told it's this boy Gabriel, but the socks we see are little girl socks. Oh, and then in the credits,
was that what that meant?
Yeah. So we're like, oh, what's going on here? So like in the credits, then it shows a surgery being performed, and like everybody is treating what happens in the last 30 minutes as if it's a big plot twist. And spoilers, because we're just going to talk about everything that happens in this movie. So if you're really worried about being spoiled for Malignant, stop listening now. But the big plot twist with 30 minutes to go is like, if you're paying any attention at all, it's very obvious what's happening in the opening scenes with this surgery, the talk about cutting out the cancer, whatever, we got to cut out the malignancy. And then we flash forward and there's this woman, she's in an abusive relationship. Her partner slams her head against the wall and she has a dream where he gets murdered. And oh, look, he got murdered in real life. What's happening? How did he get murdered? What happened? I don't understand. And there's a whole series of killings like this. People keep dying while she is asleep and in dreams and seeing the murders happen. There's some sort of psychic link between the two of them. Turns out the thing that was being cut out of her was a absorbed fetal twin that was evil and grew as she aged in childhood, and it's like Quato, except coming out of her back and with like crazy spindly arms.
Connected by the brain.
They're connected by the brain, and also he is an energy monster who speaks through speakers for some reason.
Superpowers.
That was never explained at all. Yeah, that was never explained at all. But what is happening in this movie is that the fetal twin has reemerged. The surgery to remove him was not successful, and now he's killing people, and he's making her take the fall for it. And everybody is going to pay. Everyone's going to pay for saying that he's imaginary and a figment of their imaginations. Like I said, the movie is incredibly transparent. You can see all of this stuff coming from a mile away, which is one reason why I don't understand why they treat it like a big reveal, like the video from the asylum. They should have just structurally speaking, they should have made it clear what happened in that opening scene and then tried to like make it seem like he was a ghost or something. I just literally anything else. Instead of this dumb like twist. But what's fascinating about the movie is in this last 30 minutes, again, it goes from being like a kind of bad horror movie to like just incredibly super violent, blood, broken bones, like viscera everywhere. Like there's a sequence that takes place in a jail cell. The lead character.
I texted that.
The lead character is, you know, she's this like kind of, she's like a richer woman. She's stuck with all these scum of Seattle streets. The lady scum of Seattle streets is all in there with her, and she kills all of them. And she kills all of them, and
where
it's really,
the police?
It's really.
Why did the police respond?
Where are the police? But it's like it's like a 4 minute orgy of violence that, again, I cannot remember having seen anything like this in a long, long time. I don't know. It's not a good movie exactly. I don't think it's not high art, but it is impressively bonkers. The director it called to mind, not visually exactly. But in terms of like interests and ideas and like total commitment to just being batshit crazy, it was Brian De Palma. It is very much like a 1980s Brian De Palma movie that like just takes a wild turn at some point and goes totally crazy. And it has like a lot of the same obsessions with like identity and twins and doubles.
Also the same level of acting between that woman and Nancy Allen. Sorry.
And Craig Wasson. Remember Craig Wasson from Body Double, the guy who looks like Bill Maher? I thought that was Bill Maher for like 10 years, because I mean I saw that right. movie on HBO when I was like 12, probably, and I was like,
good movie.
I was like, this guy looks like, or I was probably older than that because I knew who Bill Maher was because he had his like his ABC shirt. That's so right. I was probably like 16 or 17. I was like, why is Bill Maher in this movie? What is happening here? Anyway, weird movie. I don't think it's a great movie, but it is entertainingly bonkers. Even with all of its myriad flaws, it's not, again, it is like weirdly structured. It's not, the acting is bad. The writing is, I think, like intentionally kind of hokey. But it is.
Yeah, that's
it
the
is
question. Is it intentionally?
So. It is entertainingly bananas at the end. So
JVL. Thank you, Sonny.
Pass. My interest level in this was zero. I saw something else that we can talk about, but I was fascinated the whole time listening because I thought to myself, this is something that I bet that 48-year-old Vic is going to go, wah, I don't like it, but that 8-year-old Vic would have loved.
That's interesting. Okay. So
because you would have gone to most, see this in the theaters for, with your family.
I was hoping you would watch this with your dad.
I know. I think he would have loved it. I guess I should tell him to watch it. It's I was, for most of the movie, until the last 15 or so minutes, just waiting for this movie to end. You know, like, first of all, the acting was hard. It felt like you're watching a TV special in a weird way or something. You know what it was like? Tales from the Crypt or something like that.
Yeah.
And speaking of Tales from the Crypt, listeners, check out Carrion Death. I think there's an actual episode on YouTube with Kyle MacLachlan. It's fantastic. In any event, that's what it felt like. And when is this? You talk about the predictable twist, Sonny. That was not predictable for me. It wasn't. Right? Obviously, there's a connection, but I did not expect visually to see what I saw, which is this thing, this little creature moving around connected by her brain, like, and it just popped out of her head. So, I mean, I was watching here alone, obviously, downstairs, and I just started laughing out loud. I couldn't believe it happened. I was like, I said, you got to be kidding me. And it was so ridiculous looking. It was so ridiculous looking. Okay, so on the quadrant scale, it gets about a B minus. The plot is an A, pretty straightforward with that incredible twist. Not since The Sixth Sense, really. The duration is a B. It was about an hour 54, but I felt like it could have been a lot shorter. The action and violence, I give about an A minus, and the reason why is towards the end, the violence is insane. It's true, everything that Sonny says. But I felt like the CGI got sloppy at the end. And whereas in olden days, when you had movies, like if you watch, American Werewolf in London or whatnot, you know, the amount of work that Rick Baker and those people put into sort of that
prosthetics.
Stuff. Prosthetics and the guts and things spilling out. And this is all just fake. And you can see it, it's fake. So the police station scene is when they lost me on that one, because there are a lot of images there that almost look video game like. And it was like, you know. So.
Well, it's also shot in a very weird way to create a like kind of faux oneer, like a faux single shot, like the way the camera is placed and like the angle of the lens is super wide.
Is this like Kingsman
feels
scene
very distorted
in the church?
Yes,
similar, but that was a million times better than this. Exactly. That was much, much better.
Yes,
done than
and
this.
And then sex nudity gets an F because this is a rated R movie.
It's an R-rated movie. This is the other thing, is that when I was watching it, I was like, this feels like a Brian De Palma movie where, like, anything can happen except for the possibility that somebody will take their clothes off somewhere.
That's right.
Because, like, they're just big, big studio movies just don't do
anymore.
Nudity like
well,
that.
Well, Widows does. But you know why they don't do it? Because the people don't appreciate
like Vic
it. Because people like Vic, when they are given boobies, then turn their nose up at it.
I might have fallen asleep at that part. You know, because you want to talk about R-rated horror. Think about like Friday the 13th, the remake from 2009. That's a quadrant killer. And yeah. Another one
killed the quadrants.
And if you go back to the 80s, also, by the way, if you go back to the 80s, I would say like think about horror movies like Witchboard yeah. with Tony Katane. I mean, come on.
But it's a relatively recent switch. Like if you look at the original Halloween, the original John Carpenter Halloween from 78 or whatever, and then look at the Halloween sequel/soft reboot that came out a couple
that
years ago.
That we reviewed on the show. Yeah.
Just compare those two. Again, like, the new Halloween 2018, is good. It's entertaining. It's got a lot to speak for it. But, like, once again, there's just no chance that there's not going to be any nudity in that. And, like, maybe that's for the best. Maybe we are an enlightened society now.
Much
but it
better.
Is a, it's a big yeah, difference.
I liked Embrace of the Vampire.
That was
my favorite.
Too.
My favorite horror
scary,
movie was Embrace of the Vampire.
Scary and yet exciting. I never finished the ending of that one. The other thing was after
with, did you did
of the
you
movie
start it?
You never finished the ending of the movie.
That's right, the movie. The okay, so the idea. Thank you. The ending. You know, so in Malignant, you know, they have to force this creature back into her head, right? Which means, I mean, her head must be the size of like my head or something. You could fit it. It's insane. But when I saw them. When they did, because I said, what is she constantly bleeding from the head for? And they say, she needs to get this checked out. And
once
you
again,
see them.
Once again, Vic, no idea.
No,
what was
I'm like, she needs to get this. She needs to get this wound checked out because this other guy's roaming around.
What's all this foreshadowing?
Yeah, there was a lot of shadowing in general. But they put this thing in the head, and I said, oh, that explains the bad acting because it's suppressing her brain function. That's it. JVL. You have anything else to say about this, or that's it?
No,
Movies
like this, I just have no interest in. I was curious about who the audience for this was, because it feels like throwback horror and not modern horror, right? Horror is different. It has something to say, right? You know, or...
But, I mean, James Wan directed The Conjuring, which was an enormous...
Oh, that's
hit.
Right, yeah.
And Saw.
That was, and he directed the first Saw, and well, like a couple, I think one or two ways, others in the series. But he also directed Aquaman. I mean, he directed Aquaman, and like that movie that's grossed $1 billion. So he had the chits to make like whatever he wanted. He could make any... He had a blank check for up to $25 million or whatever from Warner Brothers, and was like, this is the thing I'm making. This is what I want to do with a year of my life. Okay.
It sounds like a $5 million movie. I mean, it does not sound like very expensive.
I'd be interested to see what the budget was because of the...
I bet it was $20 to $25 million because it's an FX heavy movie with a lot of set pieces.
So I felt like all the women looked the same. Was that just me? They all look the same to me. Like the one who turns out to be the mother, and then the other one.
Well, she looks like her daughter. Yeah, I mean,
look,
I think intentionally.
She looked like the other lady. I mean, it was weird. It was just, oh, you're right. She looks like, that's right. She
Please
like,
let all these like, characters be white. Please let all these characters
are,
be white.
They are all white women, and they all look the same. And I'm just like, what's happening here? You know? And there's no explanation about this superhuman strength or the fighting skill.
Or again, the fact that he is an energy monster who like sucks power out of light bulbs and then speaks through speakers for some reason. I like if this was a backdoor X-Men origins movie, that would be awesome. That's if they had like at the end of it been like Professor X will return in, you know,
no,
Malignant 2.
This would have been a great episode of Tales from the Crypt, particularly the special effects of the creature connected to her head. in the end when they when they pop in the VCR, right? She's because thank God the adopted mother has a VHS player, so they pop it. They pop in the video cassette. And then they see as the camera goes around the surgery. That's the part that got me. That's just amazing. A terrible movie, but it is
played to be a big surprise,
right? Or like,
and
a,
I guess
a
it worked.
Reveal. Well, it worked for me.
I guess it worked. But I'm telling you, Vic, it was not. It was pretty obvious.
I don't catch all the dialogue, as you know. So I mean, that was probably a factor. So I wasn't sure what was it. But it did. I was like, okay, well, it is weird that the killer has like long black hair. So
and like you couldn't tell that the killer was like running backwards?
It was jumping around like it had special powers. It
definitely had strong like X-Men horror movie. But this is the movie New Mutants should have been.
Fair enough. We're also. I was going to say, do you know what had better acting? Mysterious Benedict Society.
Did you watch any? I did.
I watched the episode. Better acting.
I watched the first episode as well.
And so, on a lighter note, for our listeners, we agree horror is not Jonathan's thing. But Jonathan is big on a show on
Disney Plus show.
That is called the Mysterious Benedict Society. And JVL, you love the show. Tell us, tell the listeners, if they haven't seen it yet, what is it about?
Pitch the show. Yeah.
The Mysterious Benedict Society is based on a young adult fiction series from back in the early 2000-aughts. It is the Royal Tenenbaums meets Under the Silver Lake, but for kids. I don't know how to...
So it's only half good.
It's great, and I am glad that you both agreed to watch, you know, one 40-minute episode of it. Did you like it as much as I did? No.
Well, I didn't dislike it.
It's charming.
So I sat down to watch it with my 6-year-old.
Yeah.
And she checked out after 5 minutes.
Really?
She was like, I don't like this. I was like, okay, you don't have to watch. I'm not going to force you to watch it. So she was not into it. I understand what you're saying with the Wes Anderson influence, the Wes Anderson look of it all. And it definitely has that. It felt almost like, I only watched the first episode, so I don't know. Maybe it gets a little different. But it felt a little bit like Roald Dahl, but by way of Matthew Vaughn, with the color palette of Wes Anderson.
So I hate Roald Dahl. I am sorry that your 6-year-old didn't like it, because this killed on the quadrants in my house. The quadrants being 13, 11, 8, and 5. And from 5 to 13, they were all, let's watch another.
I watched this alone, so I'm curious what my kids would think about it. As soon as I mentioned, Kate explained to me this was based on books. I did not know that.
Sling Blade over here.
I reckon. Great movie, by the way. It was a nice change of pace for me. I didn't personally find it like compelling. Like, I want to know what happens next, but. I did find it like charming enough and nice enough, and certainly a relief after having watched *Malignant* to switch gears. It's like, oh, that's good, and I can see how the time.
Did you watch them back to back? Did you turn off *Malignant* and like turn
I'm
on?
I'm trying
the
to think if I did
Disney
that. No, I watched it the following day, And I can see the allure because of this idea, which is very true from a kid's point of view, that, you know, adults are also fixated on terrible news out there. That's all there is out there. And we get caught up in it. And what must that be like? Because that's really what it's like. But what must that be like for kids? And how do they process that? And wouldn't it be great if there was some alternative? So, JVL.
Yeah, it's, you know... I mean, I think it's beautiful to look at. It is like most Wes Andersons. It
films, it alternates between being on location shot and then shot in a way that self-consciously looks like a theatrical, like an actual theater production, you know, like where you're looking at a set, like literally a set, you know, a stage set. And, you know, you're set in this indeterminate time, you know, where
I was about
the 70s, is the 80s. Are you in Europe? Are you in America?
Question is
the UK?
Time and place is not. I didn't miss that.
Oh, no, you didn't miss it. And, you know, all these characters are quirky. The set dressing, all the sets are dressed
crazy. It feels like it's
crazy.
In France. It feels like it's in France, but like maybe from the 50s or 60s.
It feels like the Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yeah, there's a lot of Grand Budapest Hotel.
And everyone is dressed nicely.
It's got, and you know, the characters often when they're in dialogue, the dialogue takes place with the characters facing, making eye contact with the camera.
Everybody's center set.
Set, lots of center set stuff.
Center set, staring directly at the camera.
The characters are all very strange. You know, the hero, Professor Benedict, is basically Steve Zissou. The precocious kids are all like the Royal Tenenbaums kids in their own weird way. Even to the point where my favorite of the kids is the little French girl, Constance Contraire, who's, you know, like cute as a button and 10 years old and like really put together with these little pigtails. But she basically looks like she should be smoking a Galois and trying to put her cigarette out in people's eyes. You know, like she's... I don't know. Everything about it just charmed me. And it is a series of small puzzles. It's one of these little puzzle box stories where you're, you know, just unwrapping little mysteries as you go. And I'm sure there is a 2-hour version of this where you could have made this into just a straight movie and not a series.
Yes.
But this is the first streaming series that I can think of which doesn't feel padded. It like the journey actually feels pretty organic.
Right, it's not like a Netflix documentary.
Yeah, it just feels like a pleasing organic. And honestly, probably this would be better than the 2-hour version. You know, like most of these streaming shows, you look at, you know, like Loki was a perfect example of this. Mm-hmm. That's a 2-hour, 5-minute movie. You know, they just get, you know, supersize it out to become, you know, more content. And I thought this was great. I loved it, and I'm sorry you guys didn't love it as much as I did.
Well, I would be curious to rewatch it when I can get the kids together and see what they think about it.
Yeah,
because
it's really not
safe.
A kids' show. That's the other thing. Like, it's again, I could see literally anybody. I could see high school kids watching this. This is
I mean, I think my 6-year-old is too young for it. I mean, like, there's no way she understood. I mean, like. She can read, but I don't think she can read like the headlines of all the newspapers as they're like going.
Well,
you like,
you tell her I missed a lot of those too. So,
okay. Uncle Vic
that's
also
right,
can't
that's
read.
Right. I'm with her on this. It's really slow down.
Okay. So I didn't dislike it. Right. It's very clever. It's very well cast. It's got Tony Hale. Kristen Schaal, who a lot of people really like, and
30 Rock,
like,
right? This is where everybody knows her as the crazy intern from 30 Rock.
I'm a little cold on her because her face is weird to me.
And obviously time has passed because and then obviously we're all
well. She was cast as an intern when she was already like 35.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, same as God. What's the kid?
Kenneth
the kid who plays Kenneth, whose name is Phil something or another, right? But again, who was like 35 years old playing Kenneth the Page?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But it's also it's got a guy from Sons of Anarchy as the like kind of groundskeeper type character.
Yes.
What,
you know who
name?
I thought that was? I thought
I
it was
know
like
exactly.
The,
you thought it was Chris Hemsworth, didn't you?
No, I thought
he looks
like,
a lot like Chris Hemsworth.
I thought it was like Barinholtz, but
No. It's the guy who played Opie on Sons of Anarchy.
He's great. Were you there for his one little monologue
in episode one?
But there's an early episode in which somebody offhandedly asks him like how he got there, what his story is.
Yeah,
and like. All of a sudden, the lights go out behind him as if he has stepped forward into the spotlight. And he does this very, again, a very self-consciously dramatic telling of his own story. It's so great. It's this fabulous little piece of work.
He's good. I like him. Maybe I'll watch another episode and see if I can get more into it. The problem with it is that it is an hour-long show. It's not, mm-hmm. I was expecting 40, it to be like a 30
They're between minute. 40 and 52 minutes. They're none of them are a full hour, and the lengths vary, which is, again, pretty good. And, you know, unlike many people, I have been very soft on many of the Disney Plus series, including The Mandalorian. Yes. The other thing is, I think this looks so good that it looks like something that could be put on a big screen and theatrical release without any compromises.
My big visual takeaway from the first episode, aside from the like very Andersonian quality of it, was, you remember that there's a shot in the first episode that basically takes you through the streets of this British town, mm-hmm. or wherever they are, to wind up at the orphanage, mm-hmm. and it just felt very fake and like
the CGI, like, fake just, or just derivative,
like, it was clearly,
fake
it was
or
clearly this? No, it was just clearly like, it was clearly all done in a computer. It was not there. It's not like they had a drone flying on the streets.
I thought that felt place. Fake almost in the Mr. Rogers Neighborhood. I mean, if you remember the opening of Mr. Rogers, sure. and you go through the model, sure. this almost felt like a model set. I mean, I understand that they did. I understand they did not build models and that it was CGI, mm-hmm. but I thought the effect of the CGI was almost to make it feel like you were in a miniature model world.
I don't know. It didn't work for me. Here's the thing is that it's not a bad show. It's not like I was sitting here thinking like, oh, this sucks. I hate JVL for recommending it and making us watch it. I was like, I could see this working, but like, without being able to watch it with my kids, I don't know if I can do the time commitment.
Would you like a couple?
Needed for it. No, thank you. I'm all booked up. And for me, it was
a nice change of pace in terms of the acting quality after having watched Malignant. Yeah. That's what I thought. Okay, great. Let's see here. Do we have any Spirited of the Week corrections or shout-outs? Anything?
I have a correction.
JVL.
Last week when I gave a shout-out to Matthias, I said he had two little girls. The baby is a boy. I'm sorry.
Ah,
I misgendered the baby. But in fairness, the baby was wearing like a hand-me-down hat, like a sun hat that was like, you know, half girl. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm very sorry, Matthias. I didn't mean to misgender your baby. They're both very cute.
Okay. Very good. That is all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, compliments, tweet us at SunnyBunch, at Victorina Mattis. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on Patreon. Just go to subbeacon.com. We're there. Tell your friends. Until next time.
Do we want to talk about Norm McDonald?
We can. Before we talk about that, I have a funny story for you.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So we are sitting around before we just settled on trying the Mysterious Benedict Society, and I'm going through, I'm proposing ideas for my children, what we shall watch. And one of them is the D+ reboot of Doogie Howser.
I saw after the episode, you know how it shows you teasers, and I looked at that and I said, what?
And so the kids will say, what's a Doogie Howser? And I said, well, it's a story about a kid who's a genius, and he graduates from medical school, and he becomes a doctor when he's 16 years old. And it's about his life navigating being a real doctor, even though he's only a teenager. And it's great. I watched that show when I was a kid, and I loved it. And favorite, sitting at the kitchen table reading a book without even looking up, says, I can see why that would have appealed to you.
Wow, she went there.
Wrecked.
She went there. Burn.
Dead, as the kids burn. Say, D-E-D, dead. Just a sniper.
Yeah.
How could she be that savage to me? It was horrible.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Anyway, Norm. Hey, Victorino, did you know that Sonny is a real deal journalist who on a plane can be told, hey, Norm McDonald just died. Can you write an obituary?
Oh, yeah. He's
and
a pro.
In the air, before landing, his piece is filed.
Not surprised. Not surprised.
I mean, it helps that I know a lot about Norm McDonald just in my brain. I was able to, I mean, that is what happened.
Did you have any inkling that he was in ill health?
No, nobody knew. He didn't, I mean, yeah, you know,
for 9 years or something. It's crazy.
We had exchanged DMs a couple of times, but it's not like he was, you know, filling me in on his oncology treatments. I mean, I was shocked. I was shocked and like weirdly affected by it, like in a way that the last time that I have like been this surprised by a this surprised and this moved by a celebrity death. Or actor's mm-hmm. death was Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Oh, sure.
When Philip Seymour Hoffman just like mm-hmm. dropped dead
in the prime of
heroin overdose. Right. That was just a real dagger. And this is not dissimilar, because I feel like Norm was having kind of a resurgence of respect.
Totally.
And, you know,
totally.
people were like, you know, rediscovering a lot of his stuff on like the David Letterman show, the sure. Conan O'Brien shows. Like he's like the one of the all time great late night interview yeah. subjects. He was always just very, very good at that format. He was the guy. He was the last stand up on David Letterman's show when he ended that show. And he's just much beloved. Like all of the like great current stand-ups mm-hmm. consider Norm to be like one of the
definitely.
All-time best.
Right.
You know, Dave Chappelle, Chris Rock, all those guys.
And it's the art of telling the joke is really the thing.
And he's so good. And yeah. it's not just the art of telling the joke. I mean, there are probably people who are better joke tellers than him, though not many, because mm-hmm. he was exceptionally good at that kind of dry
pan. Totally. Yeah.
You know, just kind of saying a thing that is so ridiculous and absurd, and saying it with such a yeah. straight face that it worked. It made people laugh. I was very surprised. I was very bummed. You know, if people haven't read his book based on a true story, which was kind of like pitched as a memoir, and people like reviewed it as a memoir, even though it's like, obviously, like, I don't understand how you could read that book and not realize that you're reading a comic novel. You have to. And it's one of the few books that I recommend on audiobook more than the actual physical, you know, product, because Norm reads it and he reads it, you know, as in character.
That's good.
The character being himself. I don't know, man. It was a blow. I was very sad to see that.
Favorite Norm bits, you guys? Mine has got to be Turd Ferguson.
Oh yeah, when he's Burt Reynolds. That's you right. mean when he's
yeah Burt Reynolds on Celebrity Burt, Jeopardy?
Burt Reynolds is Burt Reynolds.
His
is
Larry
great.
King. His Larry King like one liners. Mm-hmm. Those were always great. But I just love, I like anytime he was on, you know, Conan O'Brien or whatever, like the moth joke on Conan O'Brien
it's amazing
long...
and it's amazingly clean, because there's some of the yeah. stuff that he's some other jokes and there's things I remember him talk. I'm not going to repeat the joke, but he did it on Weekend Update, and it's the kind of thing that you wouldn't be able to tell now, and it had to do with, you know, a priest scandal. And it was just so, shocking. But you know, but I laughed. I mean, it was funny. So I'm not going to get into that. But
somebody on Twitter was like Norm. I sold my first joke to Norm Macdonald, and the joke was, he was like, it was something that I thought was so horrible that it would never ever be on SNL. But of course, it's like I sent him a list of five, and that's the one he wanted, and he used it, and he had a link to the YouTube, but it was something like, you know, up at the Oscars this week, Jodie Foster and Tom Hanks are in heated competition for the controversial new category, Best Retard.
Oh, wow.
And it's just like, it's like, but yeah. this is exactly what was happening at the Oscars.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right.
It's like the most, it's pointed and it's obvious. Yeah. And uh-huh. and it is so funny, because it's just like how he says
he also, he's,
it. And you're right. He would never be able to.
You
could never tell.
Today.
You could actually
he
not
has,
tell that joke.
He's also a great as a setup guy, because, and he did this, I think, on Jimmy Fallon's show, where he's talking about Higgins and the two of them. They go way back, and it's a charades bit. And you can see this on if you go to YouTube, just type in Norm Macdonald, Jimmy Fallon charades, or Higgins charades, and it's fantastic. It's just really good. So just check that out.
His show on Netflix, he had a like a one season show that was basically him as the host of a late night style talk show. That is just it's really genius in its own way. He was a very good interviewer. Because he's deep. He's actually very, very smart. Like, he is a student of Russian literature and
Did you see his bit on Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee? And he's with.
I did not. I actually have not seen
where
that
he's
one.
Talking to Simon. Yeah. He's talking about Patton Oswalt, and Patton Oswalt is talking about the Bill Cosby scandal and the whole thing. And this is Norm Macdonald saying that. Yeah, Patton Oswalt says that the worst thing about it is the hypocrisy, but I disagree. And he goes, "You disagree? Really? What is the worst thing?" And he says, "The rape." The rape is the worst
the
thing.
Rapes. The rapes. The rapes.
Yeah, the rapes.
The rapes were the worst thing.
That's the worst thing. They're very funny. I mean, you know.
It's funny. His whole theory of humor was the punchline should be the setup. Like, the setup and the punchline should be the same.
That's good.
Like, you should. And this is why all of his stuff with O.J. Simpson on Weekend Update is so funny. Because anytime O.J. Simpson is mentioned, the punchline is always, he's a murderer.
Right.
So, like, all you have to do is mention O.J. Simpson.
Right.
It's like,
murder
okay.
Murder is now legal in California. You know. All right.
So, anyway.
Anything else?
I am buying on Audible based on a true story right now.
Hey, excellent. And I am, just in case listeners are concerned, I am probably going to go to get a prescription from a doctor at Urgent Care for gout medication like endomethacin, colchicine, or naproxen, and I got to do that in the morning because I have lunch tomorrow at the Palm.
I do. I'm sure it'll be fine.